Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And after an inadvertent, unwanted night off, we're back. Yeah, Thorn in the Side Thursday kind of went down the tubes last night because the computer machine box decided to be the thorn. I spent the evening up to my elbows in computer innards. Yay! And thank you, Jeremy in Vermont. Loud and clear on TuneIn, Bob. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. I appreciate it. And then on top of it all, one of the two internet lines that we have coming in here decided to have an upload speed of about 0.10, oh my God, and about half of the download speed. So that was another hour or so on the phone with the fine folks there at the call center and God only knows where, busted knuckle, whatever. And they'll probably get that fixed sometime around Christmas. Which led me to think, I think I know why people have had trouble on Skype. So we'll kind of find that out this evening. Maybe. Sort of. Kind of. Which brings me to the fact that it is Friday on the front porch on the horn. It is the 25th day of September 2015. Yes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, reproductive freak, and we are ready for another evening of independent, listener-supported conversation radio. Of course, Friday on the Front Porch being a special evening in which we bring on board the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable of folks who, folks who have the experience of generally carrying Merca, and especially the 1%, on their backs. You know, because that's all of us. Exactly. And we'll get that fired up in about an hour if you've never participated in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, otherwise known as the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. It is hosted capably by a longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator and Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator, Sparky, our third stage guild navigator, who has not yet folded space, probably won't fold space tonight, for reasons of the internet. And if you've never participated and would like to, it all works through the magic of Skype. And all you have to do is send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and you'll be part of the conversation. Oh, and on the other side, Sparky says they figured out the Skype problem. Well, maybe we all just needed a tech night off. So there we go. Let's see. Because program note, I'm gone all next week. And then we will resume on, let's see. Let me look at the calendar. Yeah, we will resume live broadcasts on Monday, the 5th day of October 2015. So no programs the 28th, 29th, 30th, 1st, and 2nd. And because I missed last night, and because we're trying to get all our fundraising done, sort of in advance for next week, so bills can be paid, that kind of thing, Well, the fundraising goal this evening is $400. That's so, and that will carry us through next week. 40 at 10, 10 at 40, 1 at 400, 4 at 100, 2 at 200, 8 at 50, and the rest of the ciphering that goes with it. And remember, please, there is a premium on the table. We've still got a couple of the Last Mountain posters laying around, which I will happily sign. Because I'm in the movie. I'm the Guy Fleegman of The Last Mountain, and I'll happily sign it and put on there the precise point in time where you can find me in the film. Mm-hmm. Cool, huh? And that's all yours for a simple have a show on me contribution. Just let me know if you want the poster or if you want it sent elsewhere. Okay? Cool. And condolences going out. I had a note from our buddy Jim, Jim who has been listening to the program almost since the program began back there in the bad old days of terrestrial radio in Beckley. Jim, one of two of Jim's beloved feline family members, to wit, the Shady Lady, has crossed on over and gone to her reward. And with that in mind, I am sure that in the name of all of us here at the Horn, we send out our warmest condolences because, well, as so many of us know, our fur-bearing family members are every bit as precious and, in many ways, quite often, a hell of a lot more decent than some of the humans out there. Remember, Mark Twain, another lover of cats, once famously said, if heaven were attained by merit, and I think I'm pretty close on this, if heaven were attained by merit and not by grace, our pets would go in and we would stay out. So our warmest wishes going out to Jim. So here we are. I missed the opportunity for a whole lot of Pope commenting. Some of you know, some of you may not. I penned a little note to the current occupant of the See of St. Peter. And it was published yesterday on the op-ed page of the Charleston Gazette Mail. If you wish to read it, you can find it there. Just asking that he take note of the little, well, it's not really that small, the great big encompassing an entire region of the United States apocalypse that's going on here. Yeah, you can find it over on my Facebook page. A lot of people have reshared it. And Jim extends his warm thanks to all of you in the Horn family commune congregation. But I've got the production machine pulled back together with an amalgam of barbed wire and duct tape and bubble gum, and we'll just kind of hope it holds for a while. It's only got to make it through these 3 hours, and then, oh, I don't know, I can start swearing at it over the weekend. Yeah, the positive powers of swearing are not to be underestimated. By the way, if you'd like to, just getting the details out of the way, if you'd like to participate in the fundraising for the evening, you know I trust that the contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com contains the interface for PayPal. You can ignore those couple of questions about what it is you do when you're working down at the aerospace plant with Mr. Steve Douglas, who has three sons. Mm-hmm. Or over at the architectural firm with Mr. Mike Brady. Yeah. Just ignore that and get to the next screen. That's where you make all your PayPal and credit card and all those kind of fun choices. Cool. If you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, and many people do, you can send checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid, because I never see him, to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Yeah, sorry, Sparky, no Gorilla Glue. We try to keep, this place is messed up enough as it is, we try to keep the gorillas out of here. You think a bull in a china shop is bad? Oy. So, I missed out. I got a note here. I've got a note here from... from Ray. Simple subject line. Drink, drank, drunk. Conjugate. Rah, rah, rah. Drink, drunk. Ray asks, has Boner started a lobbying group yet? No, but there is a wine tasting club. That was the big news that broke this morning, about, 9:15? That the orange one, our Oompa Loompa Speaker of the House, has decided to absent himself from his post in a most unusual and really quite unheard of way. In the modern history of the speakership of the House of Representatives, none of them have really sort of that often just kind of bailed in medias res. I mean, hell, he's not even halfway through his current term of office, but no, he's out of here on October the 30th, which coincidentally means that he's bailing out in the middle of the fight over whether to shut the government down over the imaginary dummied up, ginned up, frauded up, rubed up, carnival midway exercise that is the Planned Parenthood kerfuffle, the great big nothing burger of Planned Parenthood. Right. It's being laid off on his resignation is being laid off on a moment of conscience that struck him as he sat down and had a private conversation with Pope Francis, because after all, we know that, John Boner is such a devout man of faith. He is, really. Definitely. Personally, the first thing I thought when I saw the news was, well, I wonder if the indictment comes out on November 1st. Yeah, we shall see, because at present it's all just the fact that John can't stand it anymore, that the denizens of Bedlam have made his life miserable, and he's just going to let somebody else do it. I'm skeptical. I have been rendered a cynic after years and years and years that extend back into the 1990s of the Republicans' control of the House. And so I figured it was either like cirrhosis or an indictment. But maybe it is for the stated reasons. Anyway you slice it, though, it's going to be hell among the yearlings there in the House. I don't know. Maybe they'll get together behind that that McCarthy fool. Maybe he was the et tu Brute of it all. I don't know. But Boner's job cannot have been a fun one. when you can't even count on the people in your own caucus to have your back, as opposed to treating it like a pincushion, when you need the membership of the minority to get anything you want done, as opposed to the membership of your ostensible majority, no, it can't be a blast. So Pope Francis came to call, and that explains it, to me, that explained all the great crocodile tears and the puddling up and the dabbing at the eyes, because Boner's a well-known crier. Not that that's unmanly or anything. There's no harm in crying. It's just what you cry over. And he doesn't cry over, well, never mind. So, goodbye, John. Don't let the door hit you on the way out, and don't go away mad. Just go away. As we on this side understand the danger that has been learned by so many other folks, that when one enemy gets shivved and you get a new enemy, the new enemy tends to be even more of a freaking weirdo and nightmare than your old enemy was. Just ask Israel about the difference between the PLO and Hamas. That's an instructive moment. Oh, yes, it is. And Jim apparently shares that notion. Jim says, Tea Party in power. God only knows what or who will replace him. Have mercy on what is to follow. I don't know if it's have mercy on who or what is to follow, but have mercy on us. Yeah. And thank you very kindly to Jay out in the desert. Thank you, Jay. Jay has taken our fundraising goal down to $372.11. Man, I did that. I'm getting good at this. $372.11. Oh, and here's a note coming in from Carol Baker in honor of the passing of the Shady Lady. Her feline furry friend, Cat Stevens, has issued his own $50 challenge for the evening. Cat Stevens will match the first $50 to come in this evening in memory of the Shady Lady. Thank you, Cat Stevens, and thank you, his human, Carol Baker. Thank you very kindly. What else? Where can we go? Oh, you know what? So I did, many of us did, sat down and watched eagerly, I suppose, the papal address yesterday in the Congress. For a man with as much influence as the Bishop of Rome hath, he was surprisingly sotto voce, and he was reading from a prepared script, which had lots of things in it to needle the Republicans. I mean, I guess there was, sure, there was stuff in there that bugged the progressive side of Roman Catholicism and bugged progressives generally. I mean, but they've been there for a while. How the church feels about gay people, how the church feels about gay people getting married, how the church feels about contraception, how the church feels about women in the priesthood, how the church feels about male priests just getting to get married, not even necessarily to a guy. Those things have been there for a while. But on the other hand, Pope Frank, I think he made. I think that popping sound you heard during the speech was some right wing heads going. my particular favorite was when he got to that part of his speech, and it was a good speech. I mean, he brought up Abraham Lincoln, he brought up Dr. King, neither of whom were Roman Catholic, I might add. And then he brought up Thomas Merton, who was a convert to Roman Catholicism from agnosticism, or possibly even atheism, and who was also very much a mystic, who had a groundbreaking interfaith ecumenical dialogue with Eastern religion. But then the part that grabbed me was bringing up Dorothy Day and the Catholic Worker Movement, which, of course, was inexorably tied to other evolving progressive movements inside the church, to wit, liberation theology. Liberation theology, of course, being pretty nastily suppressed by the Pope before last, John Paul II, who had a bit of a nasty taste for right-wing authoritarianism and perhaps even fascism. But liberation theology speaks to issues of the poor and working class. And, of course, that kind of thing drives drives right-wingers crazy. Just in case you might have thought that they sat politely by, even though they didn't like what they were hearing, oh, no. Let's see, Ben Shapiro, right-wing horse's rear end, tweeted, seriously? A number of executions last year, 35 murderers, number of abortions, 1 million innocents. Because that was the part that made the head start popping, like that wonderful scene from Mars Attacks. You know, when Slim Whitman is singing. I heard the thing live, and I immediately thought, oh, okay, all right, yeah, he's gonna, yeah. We're gonna talk about the fetus fetish for a little bit now. He said, the golden rule also reminds us of our responsibility to protect and defend human life at every stage of its development. And he had to stop there, because the fetus fetishists in the crowd just started roaring and a clapping and a yeehawing and a stomping and a cheering. Woo wee! Yeah! Oh, look at the Pope giving props to our fetuses! Woo! Yeehaw! Right? And passing the jug and yeah, cheers to the Pope! I mean, even the Protestant fetus fetishists. I mean, they were all about it. They were all over the place. They was just a cheering. Oh! Popcorn a-flying in the air, yeah. But then, Pope Francis, and you know, he does walk around wearing white robes and everything, he played the papal Jedi mind trick on them. Because he gave a little gesture, or he fluttered the paper text of his speech, and he said, this conviction has led me from the beginning of my ministry to advocate at different levels for the global abolition of the death penalty. I am convinced that this way is the best, since every life is sacred, every human person is endowed with an inalienable dignity, and society can only benefit from the rehabilitation of those convicted of crimes. And all of a sudden, the fetishists went all quiet and went, huh, what? What'd he say? Death penalty. Oh, hell, I guess abortion's a death penalty, ain't it? I mean, he don't mean abortion? You mean he's talking about them horizontal crucifixions that we're so hell-bent on doing in all the states and federal government and stuff? And he don't like it? Call me! And hence the Ben Shapiro quote. But I did. I giggled. I laughed out loud. Agnes and I were watching it together, and she wanted me to get up and see if I'd laid an egg. I was cackling so hard. Because they, I mean, they did. It was like a light switch, because we went from wild applause to stone cold silence. It was almost Zen. It was the answer to the ancient koan of what is the sound of one hand clapping. It's like suddenly, from one minute they're clapping, and the next minute they can't quite hit the mark, and they're just missing the other hand. And all you just hear the air, but they were whiffing on the claps. And they didn't like him bringing up climate change either. One idiot wrote on Twitter, "Wish our Pope would stop with this global warming. Sounds like a liberal. We can't control nature." Nah, we can't control nature. I mean, when it gets dark, it's dark. We can't come up with electricity to make the darkness go away. What is this science of which fire bad? Yeah, so I guess this idiot was saying we can't control nature, we can only ruin it. But then there was Andrea Tarantula. Yes, the genius, super genius, from over to the Fox News Radio TV Rwanda, and she and her friends with the fabulous legs. She said, "I'm really trying hard not to tweet something that will get me into trouble." Yeah, like what, Andrea? Like saying that he runs the Holy See like Eric? No. Yeah, that's it. Like he runs the Holy See like Eric Holder ran the Department of Justice, who ran the Department of Justice like the Black Panthers ran... Oh, dear God. And then Andrea Tarantula deciding that she is better at figuring these things out than, the Pope, said,
"How many refugees is the Pope planning on housing in the Sistine Chapel again? # just asking the question."
I don't know, Andrea. How many are you planning on housing there in your sad and loveless little apartment?
# just asking the question.
And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if maybe some refugees do get to camp out in St. Peter's Square. It would be, after all, a nice gesture after that Crusades thingy that the church started 1,000 years ago. Okay, 900. Ish. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just nasty. Some asshat by the name of Daniel Horowitz said, "Politicians must follow the golden rule about the effect of Islamic immigrants on their fellow countrymen." Yuck. They can't help it. They have to be. They have to. to be disgusting all the time. And they're busy right now being disgusting, and the disgusting will be overflowing by more on Monday, which is kind of a pity because I won't be here. They're having their little old values voters summit. I swear I thought that thing was just last month, but maybe it's just because it's so nasty. It just seems like a very short time between bouts of right-wing ugliness. Marco Rubio was on the stage this morning when the news of Boehner's announcement hit, and he announced it to the crowd, and they cheered. Oh, they clapped almost as much as if he'd said fetus. Hey, hey, ho, ho, John Boehner's gotta go. Hey, hey, ho, ho, take the Merlot too. Rhyming's not the right wing strong suit. It's going to be, I'm going to hate missing Moran Monday, because the Morans will be giving it away for free for a couple of days now. But that's okay, because it'll stay interesting as the Republicans scramble to figure out who's going to be in the speaker's seat trying to screw America next. More. But he did. John Boehner took the Pope's advice seriously. And he's gonna take a year off for prayer and reflection and some wine tasting, before he becomes a lobbyist who makes more in a day than he made in his entire political career, and more in a minute than most people make in a year. Because, you know, faith. Now, from a purely political perspective, this does open up an opportunity. I have very frequently said, I see no real opening, no real opportunity to take the House back into Democratic hands until something like, November 2022, because that'll be the first congressional election after the reapportionments that come from the 2020 census, which will probably make a big difference. You know what immigrants to the country like to do? People who are brand new, fresh, shiny face, smiling citizens of Merca. They like to register to vote, and they like to vote too. And therein lies the real answer to why we can't have immigration reform, because there's just not a lot of people who are new to the United States who think that the Republicans have any answers. So there is an opportunity buried in all of this to prove me wrong, which I would, there's a lot of stuff I would like to be wrong about. Any opportunity to take back the Congress is one of them. I'd like to be really wrong. Great big wrong. Honkin' wrong. Yeah. And if they're nasty enough, and if they shut down the government, maybe but they've done it before. Did they pay a price then? I remember I've seen where people in the past, the pundits and the smart people say, well, you know, those Republicans really paid a price for impeaching Bill Clinton. Really? They did? Because I could have sworn that they continued to hold the majority in the in the House of Representatives for another 10 years. That's a hell of a price to pay. But maybe, you think, possibly, kind of, hopefully, Don't know. But, you know, working on it is better than just giving up on it in advance. Ron and Raleigh with a note. Subject line, there will come a time. I'm guessing that we will in the future hearken back to the good old days of that Merlot-swilling alky. I don't think that future is very far off. This McCarthy fella, if indeed it's him and not as I'm rooting, and I hate myself for saying this, but you know, I'm rooting for Louis Gohmert. Wow, just the very idea kind of makes your eyes roll back in your head and you feel a little goofy and loopy. Steve in New York says, subject line, Moranity, as far as the eye can see, with these three words, Speaker Louis Gohmert. I love it. And that was coming in even as I was saying it. Neither of us consulted with the other. It's kind of grim. It is a macabre sort of humor that makes one yearn for a Speaker Gohmert. But there'd probably be plenty. Would asparagus be served every day of the week in the congressional cafeterias? We don't know. Thank you very kindly to Greg. Greg responded to Cat Stevens' challenge. And so that has been fulfilled. So Greg's money just got doubled. Thank you very, very much, Greg. It is deeply appreciated. And now, with that having been closed out, and $100 of the $400 hole filled in, Steve in New York has followed up with his own $25 challenge. In other words, he will double the next $25 that roll in. And that will push us alongside Jay's previous contribution. That'll put us up to $175 toward the evening's goal. Thank you. Thank you very much. Irish Dave is in good form this evening. Wait a minute, let me work up my co-cell for this. Down goes Bona! Down goes Bona! We got him! Irish Dave says, wait just a darn minute. Doesn't Big Pharma have a blue pill for what happens when your boner goes down? Marty, yeah, see, that's how it works. I'm certain, Marty says, that most of the comedians on the earth would love Speaker Gohmert, as well as President T. Rump, for that matter. Which brings me back to the voter values, I can never remember which, summit. Because, I mean, if anybody has value, it's got to be T. Rump, right? Yeah, a huge value, huge, $10 billion. He said, and love for the women's. I'm not going to run the entirety of this because he speaks for 11 minutes, and I don't think the hockey puck has been made that can stand 11 minutes of sustained sustained grinding. Irish Dave says, ah, come on, Bob. If it's McCarthy, we'd have Big Mac's House of Ill Repute. Oh, that's right up there with one of the photographs I saw yesterday. It showed the Pope addressing the Congress, and all it said was Pope Francis visits the sick. Mm-hmm. Oh, and a moment of sublime squint stupidity this morning. They were showing the Pope arriving at the United Nations, and of course, you know, Joe Scar, he don't like him no United Nations. And so a bunch of little school children were there because he's all about talking about families. Interestingly enough, though, he didn't put any qualifiers on the word family. And in as much as the music happens between the empty spaces between the notes as in the notes themselves, that's interesting. He's not grinding his heterosexual axe over here. He said that families are important. And you know what? That means immigrant families are important. That means undocumented immigrant families are important. That means that gay families are important. Straight families are important. Families are important. Yeah, I noticed. You're damn right I noticed. So anyway, they got a bunch of children standing there waiting to wave and then shake hands with, be hugged or kissed or whatever by the Pope. And in his ever so limited, almost to the point of non-existent wisdom, Scar says something like, in classic UN form, there are the children to see the Pope behind a barricade. You know, as if there were no barricades in Washington, D.C. As if poor little Sophie didn't just about get tackled by five or six uniformed, gunned up, pepper spray carrying, handcuffing, baton-armed cop types. But we talked about that the other night. Yeah. Just like the UN went behind a barricade. Because they've only got barricades at the UN. There weren't any barricades along his parade route yesterday or this evening as he's driving, well, or was, from 5:15 to 6 p.m., driving through Central Park on the way to the evening mass at Madison Square Garden. I'm sure there were no barricades there except like, you know, thousands of them. Right. Matt Scarborough, another super genius. And thank you going out to Brother Deacon Asa, who saw Steve's $25 challenge and raised it by a sawbuck. Thank you. So, let's see. I carry the cosine. We have... $17.11 to go to reach the next $100 and be halfway to the fundraising goal for this evening. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Steve points out, the Pope talked about protecting all life in the Congress. The knuckle dragger started applauding, thinking he was going to focus on abortion. Then he swung to calling for abolition of the death penalty. Steve, like me, as I mentioned earlier, Steve says, I, for one, loved it. Oh, I was past loving. I was laughing out loud. It was like, I despise the death penalty. But in that particular instance, his usage, the way he put it, it was a Jedi mind trick. It was a papal Jedi mind trick. These are not the fetuses you're looking for. It couldn't have been any funnier if somebody would have put a pie in Louis Gohmert's face. An asparagus pie, mind you. And those barricades at the UN, yeah, I mean, it's not like some Jethro out there isn't waiting for a moment to be famous by taking a pot shot at the Pope in front of the United Nations. Get us out of the UN! It's world communism! You know, they come near to invading the United States in Operation Jadehelm, except we caught them, and so they backed off and they didn't do it. Yeah, so, you know, goddamn right there were barricades. But anyway, at the Values Voter Summit, which really is a laugh. Well, let's just check in on a couple of T-Rump's remarks. I mean, he is, after all, the Republican frontrunner. Even though he's got a war going on with Fox News TV Radio Rwanda now, because Rich Lowry, made a reference to the T-Rump testicles, saying that Carly Farina done chopped them right off. And of course, there is that moment where we can note that these goddamn right-wing authoritarian misogynists can't get away from the, and I'm not calling names here. This is what I've heard it referred to in the past. They just can't get away from the castrating bitch stereotype. So everybody got mad at T-Rump for saying that, oh, look at that face, or for saying that that Megyn Kelly was on her period, and rightfully so, because he's an idiot and an ass. But the right-wingers, meanwhile, don't, at least the loyal Fox News TV Radio Rwanda viewers, they're not quite so upset that that the only way that a right-winger like Lowry can refer to a woman being powerful is by referring to her being able to castrate a man. And don't get me wrong, I'm not going all men's rights here. But that really pissed off T-Rump. And they're at war.
Need the right messenger. If I'm the messenger, you get those prisoners back. I'll tell you what, I'll make this statement. If I get elected president, before I ever get to office, I guarantee you they will be back. I guarantee. 100%. 100%.
Yeah, so these are the prisoners in Iran, I presume. Because he's just going to explain to Ayatollah Khamenei, or Khomeini, you might just dig him up and have a nice talk with him, that by golly, if you don't, you know, I mean, I'll foreclose. I'll bankrupt your entire country.
That's 100%. But you need the right messenger. And in the case of the prisoners, they never even asked. Can you believe it? They said... Both Obama and Kerry said we didn't want to complicate the negotiations. No, I mean, this was really a statement. We don't want to complicate. So it's time.
You're right. And only in right-wing world is that incomprehensible. That statement is only incomprehensible to people whose brains have been replaced by thin gray settlings that slosh around about their great big amygdalas. Mm-hmm. Because there was a very good reason for not making the prisoner release part and parcel of the ongoing nuclear negotiations. One of which being that, well, we tried that, we did that once, and at least in history's mouth, it left a nasty taste, that whole Ronald Reagan swapping arms for hostages things, because what did they do with the arms? Oh, look, they killed people. And if we had put the prisoners on the table, I guess T-Rump thinks that the Iranians are so stupid that they would have said, oh, okay. No, they would have taken, okay, what do we get for one prisoner? Oh, we got that. Okay, so we want twice as much for two and five times as much for the third one. And this guy fancies himself a negotiator.
Oh, Margaret.
I'm a businessman.
Yeah.
I made a tremendous amount of money. Tremendous amount. It's ridiculous. I mean, I don't even believe it myself. You want to know the truth? I don't even believe it. I'm self-funding. I don't want to have the lobbyists and the special interests put money into my campaign. I'm turning down, by the way, I'm turning down millions of dollars.
Oh, by the way, since he said, oh, by the way, if you watch any of this on C-SPAN, and God knows why they're covering it, but they are, if you watch any of this on C-SPAN, you can play a really fun game. It's called Find the Black Person at the Values Voters Summit. And Ben Carson's like the free space on the bingo card. He does, you know, he everybody gets Ben Carson. You can't, oh, there's Ben Carson. No, you didn't, you know, you haven't scored. No, then again, there's another game you can play at the Voters Value Summit, and that's called Find the Person Under 50. No. Rand Paul and that thing on his head are the space for that one. He's under 50, isn't he? And Marco Rubio, I mean, but then, you know, you're pretty much done. Yeah, let's find out a little bit more about what a businessman he is.
Dollars, I've turned down millions and millions of dollars. I actually feel foolish because it's so anti-me. It's so like, it's not me. But I turned down millions and millions. And yet, you know, I was in Iowa 2 weeks ago, and I had a great audience. We've had just such great people and great crowds. And I said to the people, do you mind if I take millions of dollars? I promise you I won't do anything for the people giving me the money. Do you mind? And they all stood up and they said, no, no, no. It was really important. I didn't know it was going to be that important. Anyway, I think self-funding is great. I'm the only one that's self-funding. Everyone else, believe me, whether it's Bush, who, by the way, along with Rubio, but whether it's Bush or anybody, in favor of Common Core. I mean, think of it. Now, you talk from a Christian standpoint. You want local school representation. You want local.
Still waiting for the Agenda 21 reference.
You need people that really are tough and smart. You look at another thing, trade. That's what I'm going to do so good. I always say, I will be.
How do you not laugh? How do you not guffaw? How do you not have to reach for a fresh pair of shorts because you wet yourself laughing? Oh, trade. I'm going to do so good. Well, as they say in one of our favorite films, skip a bit, brother. Let's run out to the 5-minute mark and see what happens.
Yeah, couldn't stay in the country, no matter what. And they forced him out. And he founded a company a few years ago in India, 5,000 employees, one of the most successful companies, an unbelievable job. We could have had him here. And we force them out. Silicon Valley needs people. We all need people. But we force these incredible people that have been in...
Oh, is that what this is? This is the H-1B visa complaint? That's going to shoot right over the heads of the weirdos.
In our system for years, we force them out. They graduate, boom, get out. So we've got to be smart. We've got to be tough. We can't allow our veterans to be treated the way they're treated. They're treated horribly.
Wait, huh? Got lost in the transition there. Are we exporting our veterans to India to form? Have you ever read James Joyce's Ulysses? It's one of those rites of passage for English major types. Beowulf, Canterbury Tales, Ulysses. And it's tough read because it's really hard to get it, consciousness is so fluid through it, it's difficult to get a handle on it. Then later on, you know, if you'd got through it and you enjoyed it, you can always take Faulkner's Sound and the Fury. a third of which is told from the standpoint of a developmentally delayed individual. Probably voted Republican, Benji did. It was set in Mississippi, after all. And then you can move on to Thomas Pynchon. You know, maybe Gravity's Rainbow or something. And it's just this whole fluid stream of consciousness, kind of grab a meaning where you can find it, sort of any port in a storm kind of experience. And that's this. There is no way that these values voters, you know, because the rest of us voters out here, God damn it, we have no values whatsoever, none. That's got to be how it feels for them. What did he say, Marvelline? He said we're sending the veterans to India. Well, what for? I think because it's better medical care. Yeah, see, Irish Dave was right on the same right on the same line of thought as I was, the same stream of consciousness. He says, Bob, surely with Trump's VA vouchers, we could travel to India for some good medical care. Like I said, you can either listen to T-Rump for a while, or you can go and read Ulysses. 6 of one, half a dozen of another, except for the fact that Ulysses is actually genius. Mm-hmm.
They're treated horribly. And our military, if I win, we're going to make our military so big, it's so strong, so powerful, nobody will ever mess with us, folks. We are really in serious trouble. You have...
Yeah, the military's going to be huge. Right. Well, Steve in New York caught that whole, I'm going to do trade so good. Steve says, duh, it should have been an adverb, goodly, not good, duh, I'm going to do trade so goodly. It'll happen. You know what a sundog is? It's a little, like, kind of a rainbowy thing. Carol just sent me a photograph from her buddy Curtis in Central Park, who is waiting for Pope Frank. It's a little bit of a rainbow, a sundog. One wonders. That rainbow. Is somebody looking down? No, it's probably actually an easily explained natural phenomenon, but we like our symbology. Okay, we're back to skip a bit, brother. Let's see, he's going to be real awesome for the veterans. Okay, what's he doing at 8 minutes?
Holidays, all over.
Oh, we have to back up for this.
They wouldn't tell. They wouldn't say I was in second. Other polls, they said I did great. Then I'm listening to some of the pundits. I won't use their name because actually some of them are getting better. You know, as I get higher and higher, we're doing great. In fact, with evangelicals in Iowa.
There it is. He's getting higher and higher. Everything is now explained.
Iowa just came out. I'm number one at 29, substantially ahead of anyone else. I'm happy about that. You know why? That's the reason. That's the reason.
Oh, he brought a Bible with him. That was the that he referred to. He waved a Bible at them. Yeah, I'm going to be so good as Pope. I'm going to do so good.
But we have to be careful as Christians. The progressives are pushing to an extent that if we're not careful, we're going to have some big problems and even bigger than we have right now. Look, we need people that can support us. We need people that are strong and smart and can back us. The word Christmas. I love Christmas. I love Christmas. You go to stores now, you don't see the word Christmas. It says...
No, really. The first Battle of Christmas 2015 has now been joined, led by Field Marshal Von T. Rump. Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, here it is. It's September. You go to the stores and they ain't nothing saying about Christmas. Yogi Berra died the other day. He had a long and happy life. And a brilliant baseball career, both from the standpoint of playing and coaching. And one of the things for which he was known were things that became known as Yogi-isms. It ain't over till it's over, that kind of thing. My personal favorite was the people at Yoo-Hoo, you know, the chocolatey sort of chocolate-flavored beverage. The story goes that they wanted to pay him to endorse it. And he said, I don't want you to pay me. I want to own a chunk of the company. But he went on to, and that's the sign of a smart guy. He went on to have to do an endorsement of Yoo-Hoo. And at one point, a woman is said to have asked him, Is Yoo-Hoo hyphenated? To which Yogi quickly replied, no, ma'am, it's not even carbonated. That's classic malapropism. On the other hand, T-Rump, I mean, it's just us talking here. It's not like there are millions listening or anything. Can we just say, this guy's a fool. He is a bona fide, genuine idiot. He is proof that wealth does not have as a prerequisite an obligation of intelligence. The key to becoming a billionaire is step one, be born to a millionaire. Step two, have said millionaire die. Step three, take advantage of the statute of wills in your given state. And step four, turn the millions into billions through whatever shady practices one prefers. And there you have it. Now, it has got to be crawling all over the last nerves of people like Falafel O'Reilly over there at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda that T-Rump is out on the hustings stealing their War on Christmas thunder. But do let's enjoy the stupid, shall we?
Some of them are getting better. You know, as I get higher and higher, we're doing great. In fact, with evangelicals, in Iowa it just came out, I'm number one at 29, substantially ahead of anyone else. I'm happy about that. You know why? That's the reason. That's the reason. But we have to be careful as Christians. The progressives are pushing to an extent that if we're not careful, we're going to have some big problems and even bigger than we have right now. Look, we need people that can support us. We need people that are strong and smart and can back us. The word Christmas. I love Christmas. I love Christmas. You go to stores now, you don't see the word Christmas. It says Happy Holidays all over. I say, where's Christmas? I tell my wife, don't go to those stores. I want to see Christmas. No, I want to see Christmas.
And if she does go to those stores, I'll give her what for.
And, you know, other people can have their holidays. No, but Christmas is Christmas. I want to see Merry Christmas. Remember the expression, Merry Christmas? You don't see it anymore. You're going to see it if I get elected. I can tell you right now. I can tell you right now. So I just want to thank you for the – it's been an amazing group of people. You've been amazing, and to have such a fantastic room. But I just want to thank everybody. You know, I got into this, and everyone said – there's no way he'll ever do it. He's got this wonderful company. He's got it. I do. I have a wonderful life. But I see what's happening. I see what's happening with the country. I see so many things going wrong, so many things that it caused really by incompetence that can be straightened out. We can straighten it out fairly quickly. I will tell you, if we don't stop it now, however, it's going to be at some point it's going to be too late. You're not going to be able to turn it. You're not going to be able to turn it. But
turn a noun, please. Turn what? I don't know. Between Godzilla from Wasilla and this doofus. Well, the word salad has become one of those that they do at your table in the great damn big humongous, bigger than a medicine ball, half a medicine hollowed, ball hollowed out sized bowl. You know, where they scramble the egg in the bottom and just pour in lots of stupid and, it, yeah. But the war on Christmas is on. Gird up thy loins. Oh, and by the way, guess who else now hates Pope Francis? Last week she was hating Jews. See, there's your hint. We had her grandfathered out of the program for a while, but she's reached a level of desperation. Anthrax Coulter took to the tweets. I'm an American, and this is why our founders, not immigrants, distrusted Catholics and wouldn't make them citizens. Thank you very kindly to the angry Indian for this. Catholics were not accepted until they became more American Catholic, less Roman Catholic. A lot of this happens, according to the article at Salon, because she was responding to Flush Flimball's criticism of the Pope having the audacity to bring up the issue of income inequality. Yeah. This Pope's philosophy of worshiping the poor, blaming the rich, leads to Latin American poverty. American Catholicism leads to success. So no one takes her seriously anymore. And at this point, she's just kind of pathetic, right? Just a moment. Uh, So I just realized I have over-filibobstered, which means that it's time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Oh, that's true. That's true. Carol Baker pointing out the reason no one takes Ann Coulter seriously anymore is because I guess you could call it market saturation. She used to be the most outrageous right-winger out there, but everybody's doing that shtick now. And poor Mrs. Trump won't be shopping at Walmart this year. Damn, I so enjoyed seeing her at the front of the Black Friday stampede every year. Her and her mink. Yeah. So we're very close to the halfway point of our fundraising goal here at 11 minutes past the hour. Hopefully we'll get the $200 and change out of the way in the next hour and 49 minutes or so. And we'll take a little break. Got a tune queued up for Jim. He asked for it in honor of the passing of the Shady Lady. And we can do that. It's Friday on the Front Porch, on the horn. Conversation Radio, firing up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thank you. the great Giorgio Moroder with the love theme from American Gigolo. Brilliant keyboardist. It is, like I said, Friday on the front porch. It is 15 minutes past the hour. A couple of notes coming in. Robert in Australia, subject line, biggest, hugest, strongest. Robert says, doesn't the USA already have the biggest, hugest, strongest military in the world? How could you make it any bigger? And who's going to foot the bill? Well, with the last, I suspect that Trump will make Mexico pay for it along with the wall. You know, you probably don't realize that it actually pains me to say something that's stupid. But it does. We are not the hugest military in the world, Robert. Don't the North Koreans have a million-person army that they're just ready to send pouring across the ceasefire zone at a moment's notice? Don't know that they can feed them. And armies do march on their stomachs. But, yeah, I mean, okay, so just a little bit of an aside. I've been reading some, just because I'm trying to know a little bit more, you could say that in many ways Mr. Stress inspired me to go and read outside my comfort zone a little bit. I've been reading about the naval aspect of the Battle of Guadalcanal. And I realize now I knew nothing about that campaign. And we were in pretty dire straits. I didn't realize how fragile our naval position was in the South Pacific. At one point, we were down to one shot-up aircraft carrier. After the Hornet got blasted to the bejesus, and the IJN had ships all over the place, but we learned a lot out of that. And with the advent of missile-driven munitions, we changed from the massive gunnery of say the heavy cruisers and the battleships to guided missile frigates, and we still have cruisers, and they're they got a couple of guns, but they're guided missile stuff too. We've got a huge everything. Our military is so huge that we struggle to find new stuff to waste money on, all the while not spending much in the way of money on the actual people who are the military. We much prefer the gizmos that they use, because those create jobs and get political contributions given to Congress critters of both parties in virtually every congressional district. Just about every congressional district has some element of the military-industrial congressional complex in it. That's why it's the military-industrial congressional complex. So, Robert's question is well taken. How do you make it any bigger? And it is, I think, the most potent military on Earth. The problem is having people who are smart enough to wield it. But then again, that goes back to, invading Afghanistan, which even Alexander couldn't do successfully, and yet some guy with a bunch of jewelry on his shoulders was going, "Oh yeah, I'm definitely smarter than Alexander, definitely." At the North Korean military situations, succinctly summed up by Carol. Yeah, but they suck. A million soldiers who suck. So it's time to... you're welcome. Jim says thank you so much. You're welcome. It's time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Let's run over to the Skype line where Sparky is standing by. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bud.
How's it going?
Hang on 1 minute. The phone's ringing.
Tell that telemarketer to off.
What? I see Judy's got it.
Yeah, okay.
It's for her anyway.
Right.
Anyway, I was just going to say Kevin McCarthy, he's a character. He's good buddies with my congressman, Doug LaMalfa. They used to run, they had a group in the California Assembly that was really the Obstructors or something. I forget what the name of their group was.
Oh,
but you can
really? The Obstructionist Caucus? How lovely.
Yeah, in the California Assembly. But, you know, we have term limits, so they got term limits out. So natural progression, you go from Assembly to Senate and then to Congress.
Yeah, they got demoted upward. Listen, I am cognizant of the fact that, I just wanted to take the House back and get a not insane person in. This is not going to end well. There are no moderates left in the Republican Party anymore. None, zero. I mean, when the House leadership consists. Or is at least has one constituent who is Virginia XX Fox from North Carolina, you know you have a problem. That woman's certifiable. You know, chase her with the big butterfly net.
And she used to be a school teacher.
Yeah, and she is a part of the Republican leadership along with Kevin McCarthy. Now, I mean, do you think maybe somebody will challenge McCarthy? Maybe Gohmert will get out there again? I mean, I want them to tear themselves to pieces over this. But I suspect Boehner wouldn't just walk out and hand us that kind of a gift. That wouldn't happen, would it?
I don't know. You remember when you always get the photo ops of Boehner? He's always got people standing to the left and right of him. They're like his minions. There's one guy I can picture him, but I can't think of his name. And then there's that congresswoman from Washington State.
Kathy McMorris Rogers?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's another winner.
But you're going to see a new... If it's Kevin McCarthy, you're going to see a new group of henchmen with him. Just saying.
And dare we dream it that Louis Asparagus Gohmert could be the House Republican whip or something, or the assistant majority leader.
I don't think McCarthy'd have anything to do with him because he's in tight with group of Californians. There's three of them. I can't think of the third one. There's three of them, and they're in that Congress right now that used to run roughshod over the Assembly.
Oh, this is going to be fun, Sparky.
But he's a Central Valley congressman. That's because all the nutcases are from the Central Valley, you know, out here in California.
Well, I mean, but you don't qualify as Central Valley, do you? And you've got a nutcase.
Well, I mean... The valley itself, it's one big valley. I mean, the Sacramento Valley. And LaMalfa is over most of the valley, except what takes in down around Sacramento. I can't think of his name. There's a Democrat down there. He's always on TV. His name's on the tip of my tongue. I can't think of it right now. But he's closer to Sacramento, so there's more liberals there and everything.
Well, but that's the thing. There's no good answer to the question, Sparky. There's no right answer to who's going to run the House. At this point in time, if it's Kevin McCarthy, that's fine, but it's going to be bedlam. I mean, if he plays to the teabaggers, whew, wow. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, let's just hope that Boehner gets the continuing resolution passed, so at least go a few months so we can see the internal fighting.
Well, yeah, I mean, you want to
shut down the government.
You want to know how bad it is. Of all the people to issue a press release saying, oh, hell no, let me refer you to one Senator Lamar Alexander. I mean, this is, I got to find it real quick, but, it's down, he issued a press release. And, cause I get him.
Is he going to run again, or is he going out in 16?
I don't think he's made an announcement.
But there's a whole bunch of Republicans up for re-election in 16.
Oh, here it is. Here it is. From the office of Lamar Alexander. U.S. Senator Lamar Alexander, R10, today said, shutting down the government as a way of expressing opposition to Planned Parenthood or any other contentious issue is not the right thing to do. I voted yesterday to take the federal dollars now spent at four Planned Parenthood centers in Tennessee and spend those dollars instead at 173 Tennessee community dry cleaning, no, health centers that provide services for women's health. I will continue to vote that way. But shutting the government down as a way of expressing opposition to Planned Parenthood or any other contentious issue, is not the right thing to do. The United States Congress is in the business of dealing with contentious issues. If we shut the government every time a contentious issue came up, the government would never be open. And see, Lamar is, I mean, he's a Republican. He's never going to stop being a Republican, but he's an older Republican, so he doesn't, and he was opposed by a teabagger, Sparky. And so he doesn't sign on with this complete loopiness. I mean, he may love the little fetuses, but he's not going to let that get in the way of bringing home the bacon to Tennessee. And so consequently, he says, we were not elected to shut down the government. And he doesn't understand that he's a member of a party that now believes that no government is good government. That the government should be shut down, that we should all just be out there being lone wolves, having our boats lifted by rising tides and pulling ourselves up by our own bootstraps and all that happy hogwash. So he says, we were not elected to shut down the government. We were elected to make the government work for the benefit of taxpayers who sent us here. Specifically, shutting down, see, and this is where you understand what's got him moving on it. Specifically, shutting down the Great Smoky Mountains National Park in October at a time of peak visitation and revenue for surrounding communities is not my idea of making the government work for the benefit of taxpayers. That's why on Thursday, I also voted to fund the government until December 11th so we can agree on a final appropriations bill by the end of the year. I urge the House of Representatives promptly to do the same. Because, see, I think in a way, Sparky, they know they're in a fragile position. They can't count on the entire populace of the United States to be as stupid as the teabaggers.
Yeah, I got a national park, and I got a military base in the congressional district.
Exactly. And all of that, you know, all of that goes. And again, I remind members of the Horn Family Commune congregation of the fact that I've said a long time ago, this is not politics as usual. This isn't simple give and take, work toward compromise kind of stuff. This is an insurgency. And of course, we're still waiting for the for-profit media to call it that, so that it really can be one. But I mean, this is a Republican caucus that wants to operate by the legislative equivalent of the roadside bomb.
They want to set it off and see what happens.
Yeah. Because they feed on chaos. Exactly. By the way, we're exactly halfway through the program, and I want to thank Sylvia. She just jumped in, and we crossed the $200 line for the fundraising this evening. We're less than halfway. I mean, well, more than halfway over toward where we need to be. And Sylvia sent in a note and said, "Bob, my three cats, Bogey, Chucky, and Allie, are sending $30 in sympathy for the Shady Lady." So, thank you, Sylvia, and thank you for your kind thoughts for Jim. And it's my understanding that Jim's other cat, Rupert, is sort of beside himself and looking all over the place for her. So, I mean, we know how animals know these kinds of things. Let's see. Of course, it's not just you in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable this evening.
Rick might still be on the phone. So.
Okay, well, he might. Yeah, Rick might still be billable.
Well, he said he was on the phone call. Okay, so he'll chime in when he can.
Right, but we've got Jeremy. Good evening, Jeremy. Nice to see you in the group this evening.
Hey, Bob. Hey, guys. I don't know how many of you heard last night, but Rachel Maddow kind of covered a neat little Pope Francis story. I guess the Nazi Pope had taken a liking to a bishop. I forget where he was from, but he was here in the United States. And he'd come out against several politicians, John Kerry, Ted Kennedy. John Kerry, he said, could not receive communion anymore because he wasn't Catholic enough for something he got. I think about the Swift boats. Ted Kennedy, when he died, he said he shouldn't be given Catholic burial rights because he wasn't Catholic enough. And he denounced several other people. So the Nazi Pope liked this guy, exalted him
Cardinal. Archbishop and then cardinal.
Yeah, he took him from an archbishop to a cardinal, making the highest ranking cardinal in America, and brought him to the Vatican. Well, while this cardinal was at the Vatican, he dressed the nines in Versace and he lived a high life. Well, as soon as Pope Francis came in, he pounded this guy back down to a bishop and put him in a back office where no one would ever hear from him again. And when he did his speech to a combined group this week, yesterday and Wednesday, he walked down the aisle, walked past everybody, and in the last, I don't know if everyone saw it, but he turned around and shook John Kerry's hand and whispered something in his ear. That was because of that.
Okay, I kind of wondered, because as he came down the aisle, and then he stops and has a moment with John Kerry.
That's exactly why he did it. It was kind of like, because in his speech, and I guess he said something that John Kerry, not too long ago, he said he wants to see all religions not be used as a weapon against anyone, specifically even politicians, but not to be used anymore as a weapon.
I see. Well, the man is trying. We all operate within our own frameworks, and he has a very narrow framework in which to operate. And toward that end, I'm not gonna convert anytime soon, but I respect that he's trying to do what he can within his framework to make the church a little less inhuman.
I agree. I respect that, too. I'm not religious at all, but I respect what he's trying to do towards humanitarianism at that. Don't agree with the anti-women stuff and a bunch of the other stuff, but he's done some things which I can at least nod at and say that's in good jest.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I'm just curious if anyone else is cutting out. I've got a full signal where I am tonight, but periodically it'll go silent on my end and I can't hear a word anyone's saying.
Huh. No, I'm getting everybody, and I'm on the internet connection that should be good as opposed to the one that's half broken.
All I know is the audio problem with before was because of something I was doing.
Oh, you broke the Skype then.
Last week, last Friday night after you left, we figured it out.
Hey, well, I've figured out some. I think I've made things better on the stress line too. And by the way, I should mention that the stress line is always open for people who can't use Skype. And that number, of course, is 304-663-4676. And, by the way, Jeremy, it was Cardinal Burke. B-U-R-K-E.
Okay, I was pretty astonished at that. I thought it was pretty neat that he did that. And at least, especially that he put this guy in a lower position where no one would have to hear his blather again, was kind of a smiling moment for me.
Well, I mean, you know, he got rid of the head of the Vatican Bank. There's been a little house cleaning going on. And if he lives long enough, he may actually begin to address seriously the issue of priestly rape. One never knows.
I also noticed that he brought up the mention of gun ownership, and if you own a gun for your protection or whatever, you're not a true Christian. Well, that really sent the right-wingers and NRA folk in a tizzy, because he went after them and gun manufacturers.
He was just throwing them out there. I mean, honest to God, I felt like after a while he was just screwing with them. And the Dorothy Day stuff drove them nuts. Because during her lifetime, Dorothy Day was, and even by the church, was called things like commie. Charlie Pierce pointed out earlier today that one of the things she did was she straight up got into it with Francis Cardinal Spellman you want to talk about a gagging statement, the way Charlie described it, and I didn't know about this. Dorothy Day, who founded the Catholic worker movement, and was about, in many ways, big part labor rights. So at one point, there was a labor dispute by the Catholic Church's grave diggers. That's not one you think about every day. And he sent, Francis Cardinal Spellman sent in seminary students as strike breakers for the grave diggers. I mean, just let that one rattle around for a minute or two. You know, the guy standing in the bottom of the hole, holding up the skull, and alas, poor Yorick, I knew him well, a man of infinite jest. That guy. They wanted a little bit more in the way of human wages. And the cardinal brought the high heat with a bunch of seminary students who were learning to be priests operating in the name of Christ. Whoa. You guys still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I was just thinking about, you said grave diggers. Yeah, now it's just grave digger singular.
Well, now it's guy with a guy with heavy machinery. I mean, they just drive the little bobcat in and take a few scoops out and throw the dearly departed in and boom, done.
I've got a quick question for you, Bob.
Sure.
I know I've missed a couple of shows here and there in the last week, and I heard you mention something about you're being carried by a news station. Are we still allowed the fun words? Is it internet radio still?
Oh, yeah. No, this is internet-based. And yeah, by the way, shout out to FYINation.com, and I'll be doing a conversation Sunday evening with Doubting Tom, who has been in the chat room a couple of times. So that'll be Sunday evening, 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
I'm using their stream out in the man cave to play the show now instead of hauling the internet radio out there.
Yeah, because they carry Malloy live right after me, right?
I don't know. I don't listen to Malloy that much anymore. Sorry.
Okay.
I just get busy doing other things.
Well, I mean, the days are just packed, aren't they? But yeah, and I even plan on I've got tentative plans to even be sober for the conversation Sunday evening. I jest.
Well, you won't have any college football games to watch, but I mean, do you get all carried away with pro games?
Yeah, I like to watch the NBC Sunday night coverage. Because I like listening to that old right-winger Chris Collinsworth. I'm being facetious. No, actually, I enjoy hearing from my my old law school classmate on the injury report. That's not a joke. Yeah. Hey, Jack is with us from Shreveport. Hey, Jack.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
Doing okay. I was a little away from the keyboard bit there, but within earshot. What's going on? Well, I need not look further than today's local newspaper. And that
is the Shreveport battle cry of freedom Times. And moral volcano, right?
Right. And let's see. There's a local high school. The ACLU has written them a letter, and it says that the school has engaged in a pattern of religious proselytization by establishing prayer boxes with Christian symbols throughout the school and by religious messages and newsletters posted on the school's website. And then another statement is, we also understand that the principal of the high school has encouraged students to pray to the Almighty God. So there you have it. Man.
Yeah, lovely.
So that goes, like, on all the time, I guess. Let's see. Oh, I don't know if anybody knows, but, you know, maybe I asked this before on Planned Parenthood. Do the states have any laws that say they can't use funds for abortion, you know, like the Hyde Amendment?
Well, no, I mean, the federal funds can't be used for abortion, but by the same token, you cannot discriminate. So, we have Planned Parenthood in West Virginia. They don't do abortions. But nonetheless, we've got a bunch of Republicans running around, we got to defund Planned Parenthood. Yep, yep, yep.
Right. But, you know, it's legal if they make the law that we can't.
No, it's not. Louisiana got smacked down. I think Georgia got smacked down. You can't. No.
Okay. But that's really the only public funds that might be used, and then only, I guess, 3%. And in your, I think you said in your state, was that, is it, did you have the same constitutional thing going on there, or how could they strike it down?
Most of this is gamesmanship. I don't know if she's listening, but the person who would probably best know the answer to this question would be our good friend Beth in Dallas. But a lot of this is posturing. You know, vote for me. I tried to save the little fetus. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Let's see. What else was there? Oh, yeah. And Trump, I think you mentioned H-1B visas as a subject. But, you know, I almost never see it discussed, although immigration is discussed a lot, and jobs are discussed a lot. And it's one of my kind of pet peeves, because they're always trying to open up more H-1B visas because, they can't find Americans that can do the job. Well, that's BS, you know, total BS.
Right.
And then the if foreign person comes in for the job, they're kind of stuck there, because if they quit the job, the visa is not valid and they get booted out of the country and they get paid less. But, you know, there's kind of the axe above them, you know, when they're working.
I thought it was about students that come in here, and then after they get their degree, they decide to stay here.
It's that, too. I mean, and as far as I'm concerned, you know, maybe some American students could be getting those, like, grad school positions. It's, you know, I worked with them and I like them, you know, but it's like, it's because the school gets more cash, you know, if they bring in a foreign student, rather than, you know, a local.
And they can, probably pay less money as well. Hey, let me run over to the stress line. I think we've got Jim over here. Are you still there, Jim? Oh, Jim. Nope, we lost Jim. Oh, sorry about that. Well, stress line's open, 304-663-4676. You want to hear it? Well, one thing to bear in mind when, well, like with the fall of Boehner, and by the way, he was, I didn't know his middle initial, but you got to love this. He's John A. Boehner. Yeah. See, it did the same thing for you. It did for me, Jack.
Gab.
No, but you know who's out there going, huh? Wait, hello? Bueller? That would be chinless Mitch McConnell. Because, see, the teabaggers hate him, too.
Yep.
With the fall of Boehner, and by the way, he was... I
think Roger's trying to get things squared away audio-wise. Now, he's next. Apparently, they've set their sights on him.
Yeah, I've heard on the AM...
A McConnell spokesman declined to comment for this story, the story coming from Reuters. But they're already, you know, they've been sliming him for a while. One wing nut said, regarding chinless Mitch, he surrenders at the site of battle every time. So, as the saying goes, watch this space. Yeah, as Irish Dave pointed out, H-1B visa equals indentured servitude 2.0. But I've got a loopy story. Oh, wait, let's check in with Grant. Hey, Grant, are you there?
Hey, Bob.
What's happening?
A couple of interesting things.
Yes?
On the good news front. I posted a link in the chat the other day, but I don't know if you saw it. $2.6 trillion is set to be divested from fossil fuels over the next year. $2.6 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was awesome news.
Well, it is. It is, but it's kind of got a double. It's a blade with two edges.
That is it.
Because what tends to happen. I mean, for instance, I trust the U.S. Energy Information Agency estimates on consumption, okay?
Okay.
And in particular with regard to coal. I mean, God, frack gas usage is just going to go up, 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 up. I mean, when we send people to the Ukraine... telling them that their way to economic prosperity is to frack them out of their own country, you know it's on.
So we
will just leave fracking out of this equation for a minute. But the U.S. Energy Information Agency says that coal consumption is going to continue to rise significantly through like 2035, 2040.
Bummer. Okay.
Okay, and that's globally. That's not in the United States. That is global coal consumption.
Yeah, I know China's pretty hungry for it.
But China, of course, is announcing this cap and trade system that they're going to try.
We'll see how that goes. I kind of believe it when I see it. I mean, they're pragmatists.
Well, yeah, but they are pragmatists, and they're bringing as much wind and solar online as they possibly can. They're trying because they are far nearer critical mass than the United States is. So they're doing they're doing all that they can. Their coal consumption has dropped enough that it has it's been felt in the United States. And I know I think Robert in Australia could probably speak to this. It has really it's done a number on the Australian coal industry. But it ain't over. They're not dying. It's not done. I mean, coal is done in Appalachia for the most part because they got it all, Grant. You know, right. No more little Keebler coal elves down in the ground.
Laid it out, yeah.
But okay. So to get back to what I was saying, if we take that as given that coal consumption is going to continue rising, then the money's going to be there to fund it. So when the divestment campaign, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, when the divestment campaign says this many millions of dollars are going out of public investment in fossil fuels, well, you know, nature and markets abhor vacuums. So you kind of have to ask yourself, if that many trillions of dollars are going out of publicly funded hydrocarbons, where's it going?
Well, that's what I was wondering, because you know, that's if anything, it's just like it's a big sloshing pool of money.
Well, and I'll tell you where it's going. Hedge funds, Grant.
Oh, great.
More entirely opaque, practically unregulated, with little to no disclosure requirements. Hedge funds.
Gotcha.
So, again, I'm not poo-pooing on the good news. I'm saying that take that and understand that that's not $2 trillion that's going to be poured into wind and solar. God knows I wish it would be.
Okay. I was kind of hoping it would, you know, if you had shovel-ready projects waiting to go, just needing money.
Well, I mean, look, the Congress let the wind credits go, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
And that cut the wind industry off at the knees. Every state in the union that is influenced by ALEC, and that's most of them, are working on some form of punishment of the free riders. You know, people who want to put solar up on their homes, which creates another market dynamic. Insofar as, okay, you want to do wind and solar, your state government says that that they don't want you to, that leaves you only one alternative. If you want to do solar, that means you got to sink a ton of money into it, and you got to get all the way off the damn grid, and you got to go to battery and solar and maybe your own little personal wind turbine. And then just completely tell the power company to go itself. Now, what's interesting is if you try to do that in Florida, because there's a case of it out there, someone existing, their home existing completely off the grid and with, you know, no tie into Florida Power and Light, hell, the authorities down there came down on that individual like a hammer and said, oh, hell no, you can't be off the grid in Florida. That's un-American.
Hey, how about that free market at work?
Yeah, isn't it great when, how free?
Eat after me, I am free.
You have to have a grid tie connector on your solar systems out here.
Right, so you can't not be tied into the grid, right, Sparky?
Right. But they're not going to pay anything.
Well, they're not going to pay anything, but on the other side of it, though, whoever the power company is will get the benefit of any power that you generate that you don't use.
Correct.
Yeah, that's an uncompensated taking. How can they do that?
It hasn't been addressed as such as I think it is a due process issue, and I think it is a taking issue under what, the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah, I mean, because they're taken. That's not cool. Not without fans.
I mean, my goal for the horn is to get all the way off the grid until Appalachian Power to come here and to get every last piece of anything that they think they own the hell off of my property. And I guess in some ways that makes me almost sound like some sort of wild-eyed teabagger. But I don't mean to. I want nothing to do with them because they're nasty. And also because they're gouging their ratepayers.
Yeah, overpriced and incompetent. Hello. Watch your local Transformers sizzle and pop, and they say there's no problem. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we remember. Hey, I had one more tidbit.
Sure.
There's a company in Vancouver, B.C., that has found a way to successfully sequester carbon dioxide from the atmosphere.
Yes.
And it results in a pile of little pellets, little white pellets. And that's just like pure carbon solidified into a solid. And they're building a prototype facility up in Vancouver. I'm hoping at some point, I've had my state representative monitor them. Because if it's successful, I'm gonna try and lobby for getting one down here in Oregon. But theoretically, I really like this because it becomes possible, theoretically, that you simply sequester on a hand-over-fist basis and build up these stockpiles of raw carbon, which then, what you can do with a chemical process, you can turn these white little pellets into hydrocarbon fuel if you really need it. So to run your trains or your short-haul trucking or whatever you're doing. So even in a pinch, you've got this thing where it's storing up carbon out of the atmosphere, and it's readily available with a chemical process as fuel, alleviating the need to go tar sands or any of this other stuff. That's the loop I see in the most optimistic sort of daydream.
But once you burn it, don't you release the carbon?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but then you just re-sequester it.
In other words, you're just making it into a loop.
You're making it. Yeah, you're cutting the extraction industry out of the loop is what you're doing. And it also allows you to set up a regime where they're allowed to reburn a certain percentage of carbon. They have to retain a certain percentage of carbon, and you can set it up with tax credits or carbon credits or whatever you want. But it makes it doable in a whole different way than we're used to.
I wonder if there's any particulate impact out of that, Grant.
I wonder. I don't know. I don't know enough about it. I'm just hoping. All the best of luck to them, because any process can be perfected.
It can, but the bugaboo of all carbon capture and storage schemes thus far has been the energy expenditure problem.
Right.
In other words, if you have to do CCS on top of burning, say, coal, then it becomes surprise, because basically what you're doing is you're internalizing what they've externalized for all these decades, this century. It becomes too expensive to burn the crap. And that's without any kind of cap and tax scheme at all. It's just scientifically too expensive to burn, because you're having to expend too much energy to sequester the stuff to make burning it worthwhile.
That's a very good point. Well, I'll keep an eye on that with that point in mind. Because I'm going to be following these guys and see how well they do all the way around. Because that, to me, represents a significant step forward. I mean, even if it were just an emergency sequestration system, to me it would be every penny worth it. But I'm not running the books, you know?
Yeah.
But if you're using hydroelectric power to generate the electricity to cause the sequestration, so the coal companies or the petroleum fossil fuel industry can burn more of their shit, it's a net loss.
Depends how it goes, but yeah, you got a point.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is to figure out that hydrocarbons, sun has set and its race is run. I mean, we've only been burning this garbage for 150 years. A little more than that. Maybe closer to 200 years, you know, if you count Great Britain.
Yeah.
And in that short a period of time, we have done a number on the planet.
True.
it is as if on a human scale, it is as if consuming your first teaspoon of alcohol would be enough to ruin your liver permanently. It says that kind of thing. And so we've got to get, it's not burning carbon. I know the urge is going to be toward trying to figure out a way to burn more of the stuff, but what we got to get away from is burning the stuff. Or to burn it only in such ways as to make it when we absolutely have to. I mean, you're going to have to turn some coal into coke to make high quality steel. You're going to have to use some carbon to make, you know, wind turbines and solar panels.
Right.
And
yeah, there's a certain cost.
Yeah, we've got to get smart about it. Let me run over and let me run back over to the stress line. I think we may have Jim this time. You still there, Jim?
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
I'm well, sir. How about you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Listen, many thanks to your broadcast tonight.
Our pleasure.
And greetings to all the people who are listening, and I wish everybody well.
Well, thank you, Jim.
And they've had a lot of good things to say about energy and energy production, energy consumption, and, you know, my opinion of the power company is this. They're a centralized agency, and the last thing they want to do is to see you severed from their infernal politics, their unfair billing, and they are really a power unto themselves that is equal to any government that sits in Washington, because they've got the people in there to keep those guys supporting their interests.
Well, without a doubt, and part and parcel of that is the fact that they're allowed to run legal monopolies, Jim.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we're going back to the, end of the 19th century when all these robber barons, and that's exactly what I call these people, Frick, Vanderbilt, and, oh, God, so many others. And you see how they treated, number one, their workers, number two, you know, the people who with whom they did business. I mean, it was just an economic, it was something like you would see in the Circus Maximus.
Well, and closer to home here, Jim, we had Henry Huddleston Rogers, who was a business partner of William Nelson Page, and they created the Virginian Railway specifically to get the coal out of this region.
Oh yeah,
and there's a Gothic mansion in Anstead called the Page Vauder House, and you know I've remarked, showing people who've never seen the area before, I've remarked to them that if that house was to be viewed as it actually was created, it should be painted blood red.
Oh, it'd be a great haunted house for all the people whose spirits would, you know, haunt it or scare the hell out of people who even approached it, because look what it was built upon. Blood, lack of any compassion, and greed.
And don't forget oppression.
Oh.
Because at the time that thing was built, that those are the days when coal miners were paid in scrip and were compelled to shop at the company store and buy things at wildly inflated prices from the company, and they would be fired and blacklisted and thrown out of their coal company housing if they were caught shopping anywhere else.
They treated these people horribly, and they treated these people with even, in many situations, less compassion than other parts of the country. That's for damn sure. I mean, there wasn't any type of beneficial relationship. It was all for money and all for greed.
And it was all one way.
And all from, yeah, going out of West Virginia into New York, Chicago, wherever these people had their offices and their investors. And
well, it crossed the ocean to London. I mean, we got to remember that.
Oh, of course. I mean, they definitely tied to that, and it was just part of one of the outreaches of the British Empire, in my opinion. I may be wrong, but I don't think so. I mean, it was all for them, and hooray for them, and to hell with anybody else.
Exactly, and of course that we need to bear in mind, Jim, that that's what they want to bring back. When the Republicans say that they want to end all the job killing regulations, they're saying they want the 1890s back. They're saying that they want those oppressive conditions that led to the mine wars, to the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire, to the Haymarket Rebellion, to the Ludlow Massacre, to the massacre in Flint. They're saying that is precisely what they want back.
Right, they blow a good bugle for certain people who are stupid enough to listen to them, but what they want to do is, you know, to, as you said, bring all the oppression back and the suppression of poor people, and what they want to do is just totally and completely atavistic.
Well, consider a headline from the Gazette yesterday, Jim. With the Pope speaking to Congress, there was a story, and the headline read something, I think I'm pretty close on this, Manchin Capito say nothing Pope says will change their position.
Well, I don't doubt that at all.
Well, I mean, okay, but Jim, and I'm not starting an argument here, okay? This is non-theological. You are by far a more religious person than I. I mean, I think we can all run to the bank on that.
Yes, sir.
Now, Joe Manchin is said to be a devout Roman Catholic. How do you put out a statement like that? Namely, that no matter what the absolute theologically infallible, because I know what the infallibility doctrine means, he is infallible in statements of church doctrine.
Ex cathedra.
Yeah. How do you square your devotion up with saying whatever the absolute head of my religious body says, I'm not gonna
I don't know.
That's a thorny thicket because it's the kind of question that John Kennedy had to answer in 1960. You know, and he finally said, look, I'm going to be the president of the United States, not the Roman Catholic president of the United States.
Right.
And so you don't necessarily want people taking marching orders from a foreign head of state, which, of course, the Pope is. But, you know, I guess sometimes we want our cake and eat it, too. The man is persuasive on the issue because, see, at the UN today, he said something really important. He said, concern for the environment is concern for humanity. What affects the environment affects humanity. And I kind of, you know, me, Bob, I kind of sat there and clapped because it's like, wow, okay, so maybe they'll, because how many years have I been sitting here saying, I don't have time to be an environmentalist, I am a human rights activist. Because what is being done to the environment is ruining human beings' lives. And there, with the world watching, the Pope said that today. How is that so hard to comprehend?
I know. I would just as soon try to sit here and play with Rubik's Cube and try to make the colors come out right as to understand these people, their professed allegiances to whatever religion they prescribe to and for what they actually do. And the only answer I can come up with is they're a bunch of hypocrites and they are bought and sold and, you know, they're liars. And they have only their own interest to preserve and their own reelection to the positions of power which they occupy, to which they have become totally and totally addicted. I hope that makes some sense.
Well, it does, but it's kind of like the notation on an ancient map of the oceans. You know, that part that says "Here be monsters,"
right?
Or maybe we reach to Dante for it and start putting up signs at all the roadway and sidewalk entrances to the United States Capitol that says "Abandon hope, all ye who enter here."
Well, I'm not going to say anything more, but I will say this. We had this conversation a long time ago about what drove Washington. And it's not Main Street, but it's Wall Street and K Street. And it's still there. These people get there, maybe some with the best of intentions, but once they become addicted to that power and their influence and those lobbyists who can just provide them all types of funding and benefits and free this and free that. I mean, you know, there it is. That's about all I can say that is of any interest or concern to the people within the sound of my voice, but I've always thought that. I lived there and worked there for a long time, and I saw how it worked.
How many, if you don't mind me asking, Jim, how many years were you inside the Beltway?
10.
Yeah, and was that during the Reagan administration or Bush or Clinton? Or
Clinton. Bush, excuse me, Bush won and Clinton for two terms. And I can tell you, it was kind of rough when Clinton got in trouble with that thing with Monica Lewinsky. Oh, God in heaven. But, you know, at least back then, federal employees had, like, a type of union or some type of protection. But these people, these teabaggers or whatever you want to call them, these radicals, they want to destroy any type of protection that any working man or working person has, be they federal, be they state, or be they in the private sector. They want to take everything for themselves.
And but they have a special hatred for people who work for the government. I think you'll
agree. Oh, yeah, they do. Absolutely. I mean, you know, they considered me some type of enemy or whatever because I was, you know, had career status and they couldn't touch me. But believe you me, whenever I had the opportunity, I certainly challenged them at every turn possible. I mean, these guys, I mean, you hear Trump talking about veterans. He doesn't give a rat's rodent's derriere or more about veterans than anybody else. You know, and I've seen them use so many oppressed groups to their own advantage. And they all speak, and I've said this before on this program, they all speak antonymically. Anything they say, believe the opposite.
And anything they object to, they have recognized first in themselves.
Right. And having done so, I guess I think a lot of them are engaged in a form of self-hatred. And it's gotten to the point where they have no type of compassion. And that's about as far as I can go with it.
Did you hear the story about Jeb saying he was going to give free stuff to the black people?
I did. I sure did. And that was it was even commented on CNN that was certainly unlike him or his rhetoric or the syntax of his speech. And they call into account on that.
But the nerve. The nerve. Because, you know, that's all that people of color want in the United States. You know, I want some free stuff. right?
Yep. Give them those cell phones. Give them a little health care when they see the doctor. We don't want that. We don't want them to communicate with each other, and we don't want them to be healthy, and we want them to die.
There you go. Exactly. Well, hey, let me check in here. Roger, do you have audio yet?
Yeah, I'm up, I think.
You sound great.
Okay, well, keeping on this same thing, here in California, the teabagger folk are trying to eliminate teacher pensions that are a guaranteed benefit plan. And the thing that really irritates me about this defined benefit plan is that when Social Security got instituted about 1935, somewhere in there, a state could say, if we're going to give our employees a better retirement than Social Security, they were able to opt out of Social Security. And the state teacher retirement system and the public STRS and PERS, public employee retirement system, created a better plan than Social Security. So teachers and college professors and folks like that were under the state plan because it was better. And now there is a tremendous move afoot to eliminate the state pension plan for public employees because we can't afford a defined benefit plan. And where this gets to me is Social Security is a defined benefit plan. And if they can kill it off in the states, the next move is to kill it off on the feds. And this is a side attack on Social Security to get rid of the state teacher retirement system and the public employees retirement system.
Oh, that's creepy, Roger.
And there's about 15 states that opted out of Social Security in 1930, whatever it was, when Social Security went in. And they've already nailed us. Like me, I worked private sector till I was 40. Then I became a teacher, did my teaching for 20 years. So after from working from the time I was 20 to the time I was 40, my Social Security benefit before the Medicare deduction is $336. After the Medicare deduction, my Social Security is $236 a month. Now, if I'd gone down to Southern Humboldt and grown dope, I could be getting damn near $2,000 a month. But because of the government pension offset and the windfall elimination provision, my Social Security is $236, and yet when my farm makes money, I got to pay the full 15.7% both sides of Social Security. And this is why I will never, ever, ever deal with a Republican in any way, shape, or form. And I refuse to talk to Tea Partiers after I give them the facts, and they want to come back with shit, I walk away.
Oh, is that where they start hollering communism, socialism, that kind of foolishness?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and I wear my Bernie button all the time, and, oh, he's a goddamn socialist. And, well, what part of his socialism don't you like? You don't like roads, you don't like schools, you don't like police departments, you don't like college education for your kids? You know, what part of his socialism don't you like?
Well, one thing that I that doesn't get talked about, I guess, is in these defined benefit versus defined payments in whatever the word is for that, is you never know how long you're going to live or what's going to happen, but actuaries can figure it out, you know, to give you a defined benefit, you know, and the other way, you're going for worst case, every single person.
Yeah. Well, but the other side of it is the actuaries that work for STRS, which is what I'm most familiar with, State Teacher Retirement System, you're dealing with several hundred thousand people. And the actuaries can do really great on a several hundred thousand people plan.
Right, yeah.
But when you're an individual, you got no clue.
Yeah,
I mean, I could die the day after I retire, or I could live for 50 years after I retire. There's no way to know how much to put in my, quote, 401k, unquote.
Right. That's just my point. And I guess what would happen short of just everybody, you know, just kind of dying out in the street, would be you'd get some kind of private insurance, you know, that's God knows how much it costs, that, I don't know, something private that's not like workers, that's like workers' comp or something like that, but more, something about something with age in it or something like that.
If I could weigh in. Hey, everybody.
Yeah.
Hey, right. It's Billable Rick.
Yeah, I tell you, been crazy. I got a call at like 4:10 just as you were coming online or the front porch. But, the whole idea here is to shift the risk of loss from the companies and employers to the individuals. That's the whole idea behind this defined contribution, the 401k stuff versus the defined benefit. And I think the point you were making, Jack, about private insurance to kind of like insure against, let's say, a loss of your investment funds or whatever, you're talking like kind of an Aflac policy. That's almost like a disability insurance policy, and that's very expensive. I don't know that that really is a it's not really a feasible solution.
You're talking the annuity plan, which the salesman makes a ton of money.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I mean that was exactly my point. In order for any kind of private insurance thing to work, you'd have to have huge insurance companies. You know, there wouldn't be any competition. You know, we know that.
Well,
that's
let me just throw a monkey wrench into this, if I could, please. Because, I mean, we all know what the Republicans want to do to Social Security. They want to take it out behind the barn and beat it to a bloody pulp until it bleeds out and breathes its last. I mean, is there any pushback on that?
No.
Okay.
No COLA this year to save.
I've been asking all along, and again, I'm the English major, so maybe I'm just mad as a hatter. But what happens if you bring all of these off-the-books undocumented immigrants into the system, let them work for a fair day's wage, and create, I know it sounds crazy, instead of constantly trying to run the Social Security retirement age up, run it the hell down.
Yeah.
And that way, and boom, you have just solved your problem of all of these debt-ridden students coming out of college, and the jobless kids coming out of high school, and the people who are working off the books are working on the books and kicking into the system.
I got a better one for you. Take the capital gains income and make it subject to Social Security.
Well, yeah, right. Well, I mean,
I remember the first $100,000 you make on, well, it's $116,000, $120,000, something like that, of income is Social Security taxed. Make that first $120,000 or whatever of capital gains income also subject to Social Security.
I've got an even better idea. I've got two better ideas. One of them is to have the same tax rate for capital gains as for regular or ordinary income.
But okay, that's separate from Social Security.
Yeah, and then just raise the cap for Social Security. Right now it's, I think, $118,500 a year where it ends. So raise the ceiling.
Bernie wants to raise it to $250,000.
Yeah.
Together, just pop it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the solution.
And one other,
too coward.
One other idea. And this is not mine. I stole this years ago from Dr. Bill when he was talking one afternoon, and he said, you know, we pay property tax on our dogs and cats. We pay property tax on our boats and our cars. We pay property tax on, you know, the trailer that the boat sits on. We pay property tax on our homes. If we happen to have minerals under the ground, we're taxed on that. Why in God's name could we not have a mill or hundred thousandth of a penny? Who knows? I mean, you can get into some serious money fooling around way down the decimal chain on every piece of stock. or have a transaction tax.
No, that's what Bernie wants to pay for the college education.
Well, I can go the transaction tax, but I happen to own a small amount of stock. But if you're going to charge me a, quote, property tax, unquote, on the stock I own, then the corporation shouldn't have to pay property tax as the corporation. It would be transferred to me as the stockholder. I would rather see the company pay the property tax in their local jurisdiction, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and get less dividends than me having to pay property tax to wherever ABC company has stuff, and I have 1/10 millionth of the ownership.
No. I'm talking about the property in the stock share itself.
So if my share of stock is worth $100, I should pay $1 in, quote, property tax, unquote.
No, if you consider the number of shares out there, a penny.
No. What I'm saying is if I own a share of stock in the company or 10 shares or whatever, and I own $100 worth of this company, then I should pay $1 tax because I own $100 worth of that company.
Well, I mean, if that's the way you want to frame it, you're being a lot harder than I ever was. I'm not saying, Roger, that it's ad valorem. I'm saying that if you've got a share in Amalgamated Widget, or a share in GM, or a share in Tesla, or Apple, or whatever you've got a share in, you know, there's a hundredth of a penny tax on the ownership of that share of stock.
Well, but I'm not going to disagree with you here. My thing
and
is,
it's, and understand. Let me finish real quick. It's a federal tax. It's not a state tax. It's a federal tax that is directly. You know, it's like the fuel tax goes to, it goes to road maintenance. You know, earmark that tax for Medicare for all.
Not going to disagree. But what I want to come back with is a low-wage worker in California. What they don't spend on their house and their edible groceries, they pay sales tax on.
Absolutely.
You buy a car, you buy gasoline, anything. If you are a high-income earner, not only do you pay 15% on your dividend income, capital gains income, but when you go buy another share of stock, you do not pay sales tax on that. So as a middle wage worker, I pay 35% income tax, 30-35, depending on who you want to argue with. And then I go out and I buy a set of jack stands or a hydraulic jack or, you know, whatever to use on my own little farm, I pay sales tax on that. But the big cats who are making millions of dollars off their sit-on-their-butt dividend income turn around and buy more stuff with their dividend income, do not pay sales tax on the purchase of their new shares of stock. And to me, that is totally wrong.
I tend to share your I share your assessment of the wrongness of it. But the other thing is, you know, you talk about sales; those are all regressive taxes.
Oh yeah.
And frankly, by being regressive, it means that they have a disparate impact on people who have less money than they do on people who have more. You know, a luxury tax on a $100,000 Mercedes is chump change to a guy who's got millions.
Well, but if you want to buy yourself a $1 million yacht built in Sausalito, California, and you take delivery of it down in Tijuana, and you keep it out of the country for 30 days, you can bring it back to Sausalito, California, and never pay California sales tax. But if Duncan wants to sell me a car
that or a lathe,
sales tax on, or a lathe, whatever. But a car is where I'm going. But if he wants to sell me a car, and I pay him $5,000 for the car that he paid sales tax on when he purchased it, when I purchase it from him as a used car, I have to pay 7.5%, 8%, depending on the county, sales tax on the car I bought from Duncan.
So doesn't it become apparent? I mean, I always introduce the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable as being a forum of people who are experts in carrying the 1% on their backs, but that's the absolute truth. I mean,
why should I pay sales tax on the car that was already had sales tax paid on it?
Sure, I understand that, and yet the question is, and there's this, you know, lies, damn lies, and statistics, but it sounds to me like the vast amount of the burden falls on the people who have the least, and that ain't progressive taxation.
And I'm not seeing a lot of progressives that are fighting against it.
No, I think the sales taxes and all the state taxes that you get are probably the most regressive in the country, and that actually has a blunting effect as to the somewhat progressive nature of the federal income tax system, and so it's sort of you know, decreases the overall progressivity of the tax system. Sales taxes, it's a minor miracle that you don't have the sales tax on food. I guess the government doesn't want people to starve, though, is I suppose the reason for that, maybe, you know.
There are some states that charge sales tax on food.
Probably Florida does, I imagine.
We only got rid of ours a few years ago. So now if you bring four cans of pork and beans and a bottle of pop to the grocery store checkout, you're not going to pay any sales tax on the four cans of pork and beans, but you will pay it on the pop and the beer.
That's the way it is in California, I think.
Plus CRV.
Right.
Well, I had something on the income tax, the progressive income tax. The Republicans want to go to the flat tax or the fair tax, where I guess you don't tax income at all. It's all sales tax, I suppose, with some kind of deduction. Well, they say it's unfair. You're punishing the producers. Well, on your first bracket of tax, the wealthy person's paying exactly the same rate as a poor person. On the next, you know, and if somebody raises up through the next bracket, the wealthy person is paying the same as anybody in that bracket. So it is basically fair if you look at it from that standpoint. Anyway.
By the way, Ray confirms down in Florida the sales tax on food down there is 6%.
Okay.
But see, my point is, are you going to put that flat sales tax on the purchase of stock? On every transaction. So all these high-speed stock traders get to pay their 5, 6, 7% sales tax every time they trade a share of stock.
Well, it's simple to implement.
Hang on a minute, Steve.
Okay.
Never going to happen. Never going to have a 6% sales tax on stock. I mean, might as well put that in your pipe and smoke it. That ain't going to happen.
Well, no, but how come I got to pay 6%, 7% sales tax on a quart of oil to put in my car so I could go to work?
Because of Wall Street, Roger.
Yeah, but somebody's making a lot of noise.
Yeah, that's Steve who just jumped in. And, hey, let me mention, as we enter the final half hour of the program, we started out the program with a $400 fundraising goal. We have knocked down, thank you very kindly to all of you, we have knocked down 240 of it. We've got $160 to go to end the week and the 2 week, because of my absence next week, fundraising exercise. So 140 to go, 14 at 7, 7 at 14, 2 at 70, 4 at 35. Aren't we proud of how I do my ciphering and gazettas?
Damn, Bob, you're going to have to be a math teacher pretty quick.
Yeah, well, once, you know, I've gotten to where I'm pretty good at carrying the sine and the cosine, adding 12 and carrying 5.
Are you doing trigonometry and geometry?
What? Oh, I had me some
sine, cosine. I mean,
yeah, they lost me at that. I had some geometry and 3D geometry, and I got past graphing parabolas and figured I'd done enough.
Bob.
Yeah, Jim.
Yeah, listen. Very, very much enjoyable conversation. Celestial arithmetic. And I'm going to free up this line so somebody else can call and get in here and make their contribution, okay?
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, Jim, and I wish you a good weekend. I hope Rupert's okay.
Right here beside me. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night, Jim.
Okay. Hello. I don't mean to just jump in here.
That's okay, Steve. Say, go ahead.
Yeah, and I hate doing this because every time I call, I'm on the streets because I'm working 12- and 14-hour days. But this tax thing is something I've really, really, really been thinking a lot lately about. And I'm coming around to a very, very, I guess it would be radical change in the tax system. And my proposal would be, if I were king, in concept, to have all income from W-2, meaning W-2 type income, which means labor income, be completely untaxed. The compromise to that would be to have one standard deduction of $100,000 a year. And then what I would do is, for all 1099 income, well, investment income, you know, Mitt Romney type income, tax that at what the marginal rates are now, and then put a transaction tax on Wall Street. I've come to the conceptual conclusion that labor should not be taxed. The notion that a person who labors, works, whether that's a person who works in a coal mine, who, you know, I'll put works in air quotes, works in an office, anybody who is dependent upon their own labor to make a living should be able to enjoy the fruits of that labor. And I think where we should be taxing is the unproductive pieces of our economy, which is about 99.3% of Wall Street and everything that goes on down there. And you don't even have to put a huge transaction tax. It can be in the pennies or less per transaction, probably less than a penny per transaction to more than make up.
Yeah, like a millage rate, Steve. Yes. That's what I was saying.
Yes. And then also, I get it. The reality of this is, oh, shit, I just saw a pig fly by. That type of thing. And then the other thing, too, is to cut military spending down to its probably 1980s levels and see where we are there. But I think, conceptually speaking, people who earn their money primarily from labor should pay nothing.
Well, and that's
I would like to agree somewhat with Steve, but I think everybody who lives in our society should help pay for our society. So even if you're working picking lily bulbs or whatever, a certain amount of your income should go to help support the society.
I disagree that it should be from your income. It should be from your consumption. And in a case like that, where if you had that standard $100,000 deduction, where what a person makes is what they take home, they would pay taxes through the things that they purchase. Sales taxes on things in that nature, because,
well, even if you're a renter, you're paying property tax.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that they should, that people who work shouldn't pay taxes. What I'm saying is they shouldn't be taxed on their labor.
Fair enough.
You know,
too late in my case.
And they're compromised on. The compromise I would accept is $100,000 standard deduction for all individuals.
Well, what you brought up, Steve, reminded me of something I read about a few years ago, and I want to think that the case came out of Louisiana, maybe. And it was a federal tax case, and it was some guy that they were trying to pop for tax evasion, and he made the argument and got away with it in front of the trial court. I don't know, Rick, you may have heard about this somewhere along the way, that none of what was proposed to be taxed was profit. And therefore, the case ought to go away. And damned if the case didn't go away. Some federal judge bought that argument.
Was it appealed, Bob, or not?
I don't remember. I don't remember, Rick. But
That's a fairly standard tax protester argument that I used to have to deal with when I was with the tax division. And, people would argue that only your profit, your labor is not taxable, only profits can be taxed and so forth. And there's this 1916 case called like Bruchaber or something like that, in which the court, I think, upheld the validity of the income tax. And there's some dicta that the protesters would rely on from that case and so forth. But if that truly was the basis of the trial court's decision, then I would think that that would have been reversed on appeal. I'd be surprised if it wasn't.
As a consideration, Roger writes in from up Oregon way, subject line, nothing wrong with our tax system. We know from the 50s through the 70s our tax system works fine. Just restore the tax rates to the same as then. Manufactured problem solved.
And I completely disagree.
I agree with that, actually, myself.
I don't. I think, and again, those people, I suspect that a lot of those amounts of money that people were earning at that time was probably, well, I don't know. I just think as a concept to tax someone's labor, I just find it repugnant.
You sound downright libertarian there, Steve.
No, I'm not a libertarian.
Okay.
A lot of this, and I said labor, I didn't say certain unproductive things. If you're like a Mitt Romney, where you most of your money comes from completely unproductive means or somebody else's labor, then you should be paying, certainly more than, I would say, more than the top marginal rate as it currently stands. And the other thing too is, a lot of this, what informs a lot of this, is the fact of my own recent experiences, where I have essentially come to the conclusion that democracy is a farce and it can't work, and at least on any kind of large scale. So that, and I don't know if, Bob, you remember the thing I had written you a number of months
ago. I do,
I do. And that informs that a lot, too. And then I'm probably also somewhat of a purist when it comes to I'll call myself a Smithian, because Adam Smith said that the only productive economic activity was labor. And it seems to me what we should be rewarding is people's – if somebody has to earn – we should be rewarding productivity, productive labor. Moving paper around on Wall Street is not productive. It's not productive in any way, other than to enrich, the people down there. And to be consistent with – that's technically W-2 income, but to be consistent – you tax the transactions because that's where the lack of productivity comes from. But no,
most of that Wall Street money is not W-2'd. And if we go back to the 50s
I'm talking
tax
about people
rates,
who work there. I'm talking about people who work there. That's W-2.
Yeah, but, some secretary sitting at a desk typing on the computer isn't making the $100 million a year. And if we go back to the marginal tax rates of the 50s, where there wasn't a distinction between capital gains and labor, and the top marginal tax rate was 90%, the people who were shuffling papers and doing the high-speed trading back then, which has somebody down on the floor doing crap, and wasn't producing anything, they got taxed at a marginal rate of 90% at the top. Today, they've dropped that to the 15.8%. They don't pay Social Security on it. And the people that are out walking up and down the row behind a tractor picking your lettuce are paying income tax on their minimum wage work. And the people sitting up at Wall Street, not the secretary at the desk, but the people that are making all the decisions, are getting all their money off this deferred compensation, deferred interest, and all on capital gains, and they're not paying. So I'm agreeing with you that labor shouldn't be taxed as much as it is, but we need to tax the non-productive speculator class at much higher than the 15% they're paying now, and tack them with the 15.7 Social Security self-employment tax, which would put their first dollar at over 30%, which is what I get nailed on my farm.
And I think we ought to cut the Social Security. I don't cut the Social Security tax rate and get rid of the cap. I think what you could do is you could cut that rate probably in half, get rid of the cap, and probably Social Security would have a windfall of money. I think the problem with Social Security is less the rate than it is the, what's the cap, 110,000, 112, that whatever it is.
Well, there's a
reason for that cap, and that is there is a maximum amount of Social Security paid per month. And the argument over the cap is that if you take the cap off, you have to raise the maximum amount because people have paid in more. Therefore, they should get more. I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just saying that's the argument.
No, that's exactly the argument, and Rick, you tell me, it's constitutional in nature, isn't it?
Well, I guess you could argue it's a taking of property without due process, although the process is that it was a legislative process, and this was just the tax scheme that Congress agreed to.
But isn't there maybe that's not constitutional, but isn't there in the same vein as it being a taking, isn't it, if you're not paying according to what's being paid, paid in, all if you've removed the cap, isn't there a lack of, I mean, almost like in the concept of eminent domain? Isn't there a want of fair compensation?
You're talking like a violation of a contract. Is that kind of what you're getting at, Bob?
Well, no. If a governmental entity exercises eminent domain, they are required to pay. They are required to justly compensate the person.
Right.
Being taken from.
Sure.
In other words, they can't come out and take your 40 acres and hand you a buck and a quarter and say, thanks for playing. There has to be something relating to fair market value.
I don't think that's the case, and I'll tell you why I don't think that's the case. Unemployment compensation is capped at $405 a week in New York, no matter how much money you could have made.
That's true.
Six-figure income, you could have made a six-figure income, and if, I don't know what, I mean, I don't know.
No, you remind me, Steve, of something that happened the last time, and I remember the story during the 08 meltdown. There were people who were making vast sums of money down, I think the story was out of Houston, and suddenly they were having to file for unemployment and welfare benefits. And they were saying, wait, this is all the money we get? How am I going to make my McMansion payment?
I mean, I was making, look, and I hate saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway because it illustrates the point. I was making a six-figure income before I got laid off with 2 days notice back in 2012. And to go from making that to making $400 a week, which is not even close to a rent payment in New York City, that gets capped. I don't think there's any problem at all with taking the cap off of Social Security.
How much of that six-figure income was W-2'd and how much was 1099 or anything else? All of it was W-2'd?
All of it. Yes.
Okay. Just a question.
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, whenever you have a government benefit plan, I don't think you're going to have a problem with it constitutionally in terms of either being a taking or, you know, something like that, because it's something that is subject to the legislative process. People have a, theoretically anyway, have a shot at influencing the vote of their representatives. They can make their views known, petition their government, all that sort of thing. So I don't think you're going to get very far if you're challenging the validity of a governmental benefit program in terms of alleging it's constitutional or unconstitutional. Social Security has been challenged many times in the past, and it's always been upheld as constitutional.
I mean, and certainly when Social Security first went into effect, there were probably a number of people, other than what were known as notch babies. I don't know if anyone knows what that term is, but there was like a group of people that didn't get Social Security. In any event, there was, I can suspect and guarantee that there were a number of people, probably the initial recipients of Social Security, who probably paid next to nothing into it. That's not a complaint. That's probably just a fact, and we're probably getting, you know, some sort of benefit beyond what they paid in.
My grandfather was one.
Yeah. And thank God for that, because, you know, otherwise it would have been nothing. They would have been on the street.
Kept him out of poverty.
How dare he?
Yeah.
And again, I'm not trying to sound libertarian. God no, I've had these email exchanges with Bob. I am not libertarian. I'm coming at this from the perspective of what number one, what I find productive. I don't think that there should not be taxes. I don't think that there in concept should not be. I don't call it government. I call it collective action for certain problems too big for individuals to handle. But I come at it from, yes, the concept of, I think it's immoral to tax labor as a principle, but I look at government now and it does not serve. If anybody tries to say that it somehow serves anybody other than a sliver of people to top, you're kidding yourself. And I'll say one other example that happened to me recently that I found it just disgusted the hell out of me. A number of years ago, I had collected unemployment for a number of weeks. It was miserable, to the massive tune of $8,800 over, I don't know, probably close to half a year. And of course, in that, I was buying plenty of crab, king crab, and all that kind of stuff, as Speaker Asparagus said.
Exactly.
Exactly. And I filed my taxes, and that $8,800 that I was living high off the hog on caused my tax bill to go up almost $3,000.
Wow.
And it's like, and yet that's where I've come to where I've come from is I look at government as almost a destructive thing at this point. And I don't want any part of it.
Well, I mean, but Steve, the right wing has worked hard to make it that way.
Oh, I know. And that's why I'm saying I'm not a libertarian. I'm not saying this as a general principle. I'm saying this, a lot of what I'm saying has to do with looking out at the current landscape, seeing where it is and say, okay, given where it is, this is where I'm coming from.
Well, let me share something coming from Ron, who's not in the chat, but he says, I'm listening to the show from down here in West Virginia and enjoying it. Ron has come down from the frozen north, you see. We'll be getting together on Sunday. I'm enjoying the discussion about taxes and will simply say that from my very limited experience that capital gains should be taxed at the same rate as any other source of income. It's income, period.
I agree. I should be
tax
higher.
Should also be progressive be with a ceiling at 50% on all income over $1 million. Social Security should be calculated on total income regardless of source. Them that has, gives. See that hanging out in Canada all them years is beginning to rub off on Ron. Yeah. Oh, and I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt along these lines, but I needed to make a correction. I had a note from one of the people who contributed this evening, and I sent an email out to see if it would be okay to use their name, but I haven't heard word back. Part of what came in, the 240 we've raised this evening, 50 of that was actually dedicated to the equipment fund. So we're going to close the program $210 down, which is essentially the exact amount we finished down because I wasn't here last night. So that's where we stand. And it would be great if we could not be standing there, you know, much longer.
Hey, Bob, you guys met my challenge. Did you meet the challenge?
Yes, the challenge. Yeah, the challenge did get met.
Okay, I'll PayPal when I get off.
Okay. In fact, Sylvia did that.
Okay.
And much obliged, Steve. Much obliged indeed.
Yeah, I...
by the way, note coming from Robert in Australia, subject line, speaking of pensions... Tony Abbott, our ex-prime minister, will now receive a pension of around $307,000 per year for life, regardless of what else he does. Had he been prime minister for a few more months, it would be around $400,000. He did say before the election, pensions will be safe. He just didn't say whose. Good work if you can get it.
I'm going to step off because it's about that time.
Yeah, it's about time for me to do the same.
Wish everyone a wonderful weekend. And Bob, I know you're going to hate me saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Go Buckeyes.
Wait, who are they playing?
I think Northern Illinois, or I don't know.
No, Northern Illinois was last week.
Oh, I don't know. It's
and they almost got their asses handed to them.
I know. Believe me, I know. I know.
But they always have a little bit of a struggle with a MAC team. But you know,
the MAC
you didn't,
is a scrappy conference.
You didn't have happen to you what happened to the Tide last week. Oh my God, that was the single loopiest, craziest, goofiest pass play I have ever seen in years of watching college football. I mean, it's just one of those moments when you look up and go, well, you know, it ain't us today.
And I have to ask this, what happened to the Alabama defense? That defense hasn't been worth anything since about mid last year.
I think there's problems in T-Town. If it was me, the first thing I'd do would be get rid of Lane Kiffin because he's just, to get all biblical, if you've got Lane, you know, ask USC, ask Tennessee. If you've got Lane Kiffin on your team, you have a Jonah on your boat. So,
well, I'm not complaining, believe me.
And tomorrow, my beloved Mountaineers will host the terrible Terrapins of the University of Maryland up at Milan Puskar Stadium at Mountaineer Field. Naming rights, right? Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. So it is time to get out of here. Thanks to everybody in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable for joining in this evening. Thanks to all of you for your email comments. I tried to get to as many of them as I could. I'm sorry we didn't get to Devin. Didn't hear much from Larry either. I apologize for that. But thank you to Steve and Roger. Thank you to Jack for joining in. Thank you to Grant and Jeremy and Larry and Devin. And thank you to Billable Rick. And thank you to, always to longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran, Horn Malloy Skype group moderator, Sparky. And me, I'm off on the road, heading down Hotlanta way as of Monday. And I'll be back the following Monday for more in Monday, and I hope you'll be there too. I'll miss you guys. I know I will. 6 o'clock will come around, and I'll be like, ain't I supposed to be doing something? Yeah. So thanks to you all. Thank you to everybody for helping us dig our way partially out of the hole. We finished, $210 to go, and that beats the hell out of 400 or 6 or 1,000 by a long shot. Thank you very, very much, one and all. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody, and a great week. Bye now.